Read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 7, Verse 34. Dānasya tapaso vāpi yacchesta purtayo phalam pravasastasya yo dharmo yascha pungsa uthapadi. Dānasya of charity, tapaso of penance, avapi, lake, yat, that which, cha, and, ishta, endeavor, purtayo, reservoirs of water, phalam, fruit of result, pravasas tasya, one who was away from home, ya, that which, dharma, duty, yacha, and which, pumsa, of man, uta, described, apadi, in danger. Translation, please also describe the fruit of results of charity and penance and of digging reservoirs of water. Please describe the situation of persons who are away from home, and also the duty of a man in an awkward position. Purport, the digging of reservoirs of water for public use is a great work of charity, and retiring from family life after 50 years of age is a great act of penance performed by the sober human being. Text 35. O sinless one, because the personality of Godhead, the controller of all living entities, is the father of all religion and all those who are candidates for religious activities, kindly describe how he can be completely satisfied. For all religious activities are meant ultimately to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is the father of all religious principles. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, four kinds of pious men, the needy, the distressed, the enlightened, and the inquisitive, approach the Lord in devotional service, and their devotion is mixed with material affection. But above them are the pure devotees, whose devotion is not tainted by any material tinges of fruit of work or speculative knowledge. Those who are only miscreants throughout their lives are compared to demons. They are bereft of all knowledge, in spite of all any academic, educational career they may pursue. Such miscreants are never candidates for satisfying the Lord. Translation, please also describe the fruit of results of charity and penance and of digging reservoirs of water. Please describe the situation of persons who are away from home and also the duty of a man in an awkward position. Also in this one, because the personality of God is the controller of all living entities, is the father of all religion and all those who are candidates for religious activities, kindly describe how he can be completely satisfied. So this is more or less the conclusion of this whole section of requests by Vidura to Maitreya to describe different topics of the Bhagavatam. As I explained the other day, we have 10 topics, and of course the principal topic is Asraya, Krishna, and his pastimes, and the other 9 are secondary to that and supported. Nevertheless, in one sense, they deal with subjects which are not the goal of the devotees. So many of the topics deal with dharma, and therefore the request in the previous verse was offerings to the forefathers, Pitraloka, etc. And previous to that we had different ashramic and varnic duties, etc. And this verse we have different punyas, how to do charity works, dana, how to do tapas, austerity, how to dig wells for people. So generally we don't consider this related to bhakti at all. Huh? And often we see Prabhupada criticizes people who indulge in charity works instead of doing devotion. Huh? Yet, we'll find that in the Bhagavatam these things are described, and there's whole sections of the Smriti Shastras and Puranas which deal with how you have to do charitable works and different vratas, etc. So why we have this little bit of a contrast here between rejection of everything except bhakti, and then we have a participation in all these charitable activities and varnashram activities. So, as I said, they are secondary elements which are part of the whole system that is offered by the Supreme Lord for advancement of the human being. And in that sense, they should not be rejected. However, if we think that these are the ultimate goal and bhakti is not the ultimate goal, then we must reject them. In other words, if we're climbing some stairs, we go up the first step, we go up the second step, we go up the third step, where do we stop? We stop at the top of the stairs where the goal is, the next floor of the building. We don't stop on the third step and stay there, on the stairwell. So all of these different processes are simply steps leading to bhakti, and then bhakti leads to the Supreme Lord. And we simply sit on the second step and do karma yoga or jnana yoga, we don't get the Lord. So it's useless in itself. It's only a stepping stone to go higher. So that's how we should view all of these things in Dharma. The charity works and the tapas and building our lakes and wells and supplying water to people and planting gardens, etc. Nothing wrong with it, but at the same time, it's only one step towards something else, which is worship of Krishna, the asraya. So we have to understand the proper position of these different topics. So there's a very simple principle stated in Bhagavatam and also in the quoted in the Nectar of Devotion by Rupa Goswami. And that is, until you develop a taste for the hearing the topics of the Lord, then you must engage in these activities of karma, or karma yoga, or dharma, or varnashram. And of course, the opposite statement is, when you develop a taste in the topics of Krishna, then you don't have to do them anymore. So, these are only steps towards developing faith in topics of the Lord and taste in topics of the Lord. When we become attracted to the Supreme Lord, these become less important. And at the same time, we have to realize that these are not causes of developing faith. They are not causes of bhakti. As long as we don't have faith, yes, we must do these processes. But at the same time, we should not think that karma yoga is a direct cause of bhakti, or that jnana is a direct cause of bhakti. Just as we cannot think the second step or the third step is the cause of attaining the top. Yes, they are factors or stages, but they are not actually a cause. The cause actually is the person who is going up the steps and using his energy. So, they are convenient stages of life or of human endeavor for those who do not have faith in hearing about the Supreme Lord. And what is the, how are they favorable is that they help us control our senses, they help us give up our sense of possessiveness. So that is why we have charity works. Charity means we have to give to others. We serve other people. If we do that, we have to spend some effort and some money, usually. We have to give something of our what we've earned. This means we have to become detached. Which means we give up this idea that I've earned this money because I put this effort, therefore I own it and I can enjoy it. So charity works helps us get rid of that idea. In Bhagavatam we often hear the words aham mama, the concept of I and mine. So that is ingrained in the jiva. He wants to get enjoyment. So charity work is the counteractivity. It helps us reduce this idea of I am doing it and this is mine. And so we do for others. So that is charity. Then we have tapas. What is tapas? It is voluntary acceptance of some painful situation. That's tapas means actually pain or heat. So we voluntarily accept some inconvenience to our body and senses. Why would we do that? For a higher goal. So we see we have tapas in the mode of ignorance, passion, and goodness. In the mode of ignorance, we have people who do tapas, which actually injures the body. And it's for a very selfish, violent goal, like Hiranyakasipu. Starving himself for a thousand years and standing on his tiptoes so that he can get more power than anybody else and be immortal so that he can conquer over the devatas and Vishnu. That's a very tamasic type of austerity. But when we get to sattvagun, the tapas is controlling the senses according to the scriptures and carrying out vratas and other things according to scriptures. And what is it for? Sense control and mental control. Because a person in sattvagun realizes that this is necessary for spiritual advancement. We see early in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the mind is your friend or the mind is your enemy. If you cannot control your mind, mind is your enemy. What does that mean? You go down in the gunas. And if you go down to tamogun for long enough, then you become an animal in your next lifetime. So that's the cause of degradation. And when you can control the mind properly, you can elevate yourself. So the demons also control their mind. They do their tapas, but what is it for? It's for degrading themselves further for more violent activities. Nothing good. People in Rajagun, they control their senses. They work very hard day and night for many, many, many years. Why? Because they get some material comforts in life. And they don't overly do sinful activity. Whereas a tamasic person doesn't care. He'll do any sinful activity. So a person in sattvagun, on the other hand, he controls his senses. Or spiritual advancement. So what is the spiritual advancement of a person in sattvagun? By controlling his senses, then he gets inner satisfaction. He is satisfied with the Atma. He understands he is Atma, not body. Controlling the senses means he gives up the idea of enjoying with the body and the senses is nice. That's my enjoy. This is the goal of life. He is detached from that. And he gets inner enjoyment. That means he is inclined to knowledge of Atma, Atma Jnana. This is a person of sattva. So, the scriptures recommend tapas or control of the senses. And therefore, we have, of course, we have the tamasic and the rajasic, which are not recommended by scripture. And then we have the tapas in a very general sense, the rules and regulations of the Varnashram system. Rules for the sudras, a Varna rule. Rules for the Vaishyas. Rules for the Kshatriyas, rules for the Brahmanas. This is a tapas. They have to restrict their senses to some degree. And we have rules for ashramas, for brahmacharis, for grihasthas, for vanaprasthas, for sannyasis. So we have all sets of rules to restrict your senses and your mind from wandering around. So generally, the senses and the mind don't like to get restricted. So it's painful in the sense it's a restriction. So in this way, gradually by these voluntary restrictions, a person progressed to the next level, the next level, the next level, of more and more restrictions until we come to the Brahmana, who has the most restrictions. And he can do it because he is less attached to the material world at that point. So the whole point of that of dharma or varnashram or karma yoga is to lead you upwards towards sattva gun, so that you can realize you're not the body. You're the soul. So this is the first step in spiritual life, self-realization. It's not the final goal. It's only one step. So just as we go up the different steps of karma yoga, and then we go to jnana and sangha yoga, so gradually we go through the gunas, tamagun, rajagun, sattvagun, and then I'm not the body, I am the soul. That's a big step, spiritual step. We're out of the material consciousness when we get to sattvagun and we realize we're not the body, we're the soul. Unfortunately, we can get stuck there. I made the big breakthrough. I'm not the body, I'm soul, I'm atma, I'm eternal, finish. And we think that's the end of everything. So this is the danger of sattvaguna and jnana, that we get stuck in that platform of liberation from the material world, destruction of karma, no more birth and death, etc. That's the problem. So we're stuck on the last step, and we don't go any further. So, therefore, that's the limitation of this whole system of karma yoga and jnana yoga. We get stuck in there somewhere, and we don't go any further. On the other hand, the positive aspect is it helps people raise up, even if they don't even know about it. The sutra's not even concerned about, you know, what's the goal in life. He's just interested in supporting himself and his family. So it's provided for him. But gradually, a person rises up in the gunas, birth after birth. So that's the value of the system. For people who don't even know it, they gradually get elevation until they get to sattva guna. And they appreciate, I'm not the body, I'm the soul. So, in that sense, it's good. So the kings are in charge of, the Manus, descendants of Manu, are in charge of instituting this whole system to help the people gradually elevate themselves upward until they can understand, I'm not the body, I'm the spirit soul. But it cannot end there. Somehow, we have to get to the next stage in realizing Supreme Lord, not just the Atma, but Supreme Lord and our relationship with the Lord. If we end only with Atma, we end up with I am it, I am Brahman, I merge in Brahman. It's the impersonal. So the next stage is we got to get the mercy of devotees to understand there's a Supreme Lord and I am the servant of the Lord. I am definitely spiritual, but I am the servant of the Supreme Lord. So that can only be imparted by devotees. It is the mercy of devotees that give this. It is not a direct result of karma or jnana. So you can practice varnashram forever, you can practice jnana forever, and you don't necessarily become a devotee ultimately. So though it looks like there's a gradual progression up from one to the other, one is the cause of the other, it's not so when it comes to bhakti. Bhakti is not caused by this system. And the reason is that, yes, these things are in the gunas. Okay? So by control of the senses in tamagun, we can get up to rajagun and sattvagun. So we can say one is the cause of the other by control of senses in varnashram system. But bhakti yoga is beyond the gunas. So anything in the gunas cannot create something beyond the gunas. Sattva-guna cannot get you beyond the gunas. Tamaguna cannot get you beyond the gunas. It just keeps you in the gunas. So technically, a jnana is in sattva-guna. So it also cannot get you beyond the gunas. It cannot even give you liberation. Because it's sattva-guna. All it can do is lead you to the top of sattva-guna, which is Brahma-loka. In itself. So something in the gunas cannot get you beyond the gunas. So only something beyond the gunas can get you beyond the gunas. So what is beyond the gunas? Supreme Lord is beyond the gunas. Bhakti is beyond the gunas. So that is why our acharyas say that only if you get the mercy of the Lord you can get liberation. Cause of even impersonal liberation is Supreme Lord's mercy. Why would he give mercy to a person like that? Because they want that. So he'll give it to them. But you can't get the mercy of the Supreme Lord unless you accept the Lord. If you offend the Lord, you can definitely not get his mercy to get liberation. So therefore, the true Gyani who wants liberation must also accept the Supreme Lord and worship the Lord. So in that sense, liberation is dependent on bhakti. The direct cause of liberation is not jnana, because jnana only limits you to sattva-gut. The cause of liberation is bhakti, the Supreme Lord. Yeah. So, therefore, bhakti is nirguna, and the only nirguna process. So, though this system of Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, Astanga Yoga is also created by the Lord, and therefore it's pleasing to the Lord in one sense, we also know that ultimately Supreme Lord is not pleased with anything except bhakti. And therefore we see in the Nectar Devotion the final unique feature of bhakti is Krishna Karshani. Bhakti attracts Krishna. That means that Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, Astanga Yoga do not attract Krishna. But bhakti attracts Krishna. Yeah? So this verse here is please explain how that the Supreme Lord is pleased. He is the father of all dharma and religion and varnashram and all the living entities, etc. And in all the gunas and all the varnas and ashramas. But what satisfies him most? Yeah? So yes, following dharma, varnashram, karma yoga is pleasing to the Lord. Jnana is also pleasing to the Lord because he's explaining all this in Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, but most pleasing to the Lord is bhakti. What does that mean? If we directly express affection for the Lord is pleased with that. That's what it means. This is not a direct affection for the Lord. It's related to the Lord because the Lord makes a system and then we follow a system. But we're not directly expressing affection for the Supreme Lord. At best, in sattva good, because the Lord said to do this, I'm doing this. So in one sense, a little bit of affection, a little following, obeying the Lord, orders of the Lord without material things, that nishkama karma yoga. But it's not an affection in the sense that we see the devotees like Ambarish or Dhruva or Prahlad. Out of their affection for the Lord, they're completely absorbed in his service. That's quite different. So that is what is most pleasing to the Lord. And what's natural? As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, as you surrender unto me, I respond accordingly. Doing dharma and jnana, okay, surrender to the Lord because the Lord has set up the system, so in one sense, yet indirectly, to that extent the Lord is pleased. But when we directly serve the Supreme Lord, Lord is more pleased. Direct surrender is more pleasing than indirect surrender. Then again, in bhakti itself, the surrender is of various degrees. Yeah. We have to surrender in one sense to do bhakti. Our qualification in faith is we accept the Supreme Lord, we accept we're the servant of the Lord. So there's some idea of surrender there. But that's like a little trace of surrender. 0.01% trace of surrender. When a devotee gets to prema, it is 100% surrender. The devotee offers everything to the Supreme Lord continuously, without break, in all time, eternally. He surrendered everything to the Supreme Lord, body, mind, words, atma, everything. Everything is for the Supreme Lord. And it's spontaneous, it's continuous, 100%. Therefore, even in the process of bhakti, the Lord responds accordingly. So in the beginning, we have a little bit, Lord is very happy with that, much more than with the karmis and the jnanis and the yogis. But if you attain prema, then the Lord is completely surrendered to the devotee. And that's why the Krishna Karshani manifests in prema state. Krishna is controlled by the devotee who is prema because the devotee is completely surrendered to the Lord. Because the devotee is completely surrendered to the Lord is completely surrendered to the devotee. Yeah? So in other words, according to your surrender to the Lord response. Yeah. So that is true for this whole system of karma, jnana, sangha yoga, and bhakti yoga. Within bhakti yoga, so the different stages we go through from Vajna Kriya, Narsana Vritti, Nishtaruchi, Sakya Bhava Prema. The Lord surrenders more and more and more. So it's a very simple principle. So what is most pleasing to the Lord is bhakti. And in bhakti, what is most pleasing to the Lord is prema. And even in prema, there is difference because there are different forms of the Lord. So we get different types of prema. We get prema for Vishnu. We get prema for Rama. We get prema for Narsimha. We get prema for Krishna. And in these different forms, again, there is different degrees of response. It's all full surrender because it's all prema. But nevertheless, there is intensity of that prema. So with Vishnu, the prema is mixed with the idea that this is the Supreme Lord. This is called Aishwarya Gyan. We understand the power of the Supreme Lord. So therefore the intensity of the prema is less. We go to the opposite extreme with Krishna in Gokul, in the spiritual world. There is no idea that Krishna is Supreme Lord at all. Krishna is only a friend. Krishna is only a child. Vatsalya Rasa, or Krishna is only my lover. So it's all Madhurya. No concept of Krishna, Supreme Lord. And therefore, relationship with Krishna is most intense in prema. So all the other forms of the Lord, the prema is of various intensities. But with Krishna, it is the highest. Of course, with Krishna also, there is various degrees of prema, and consequently various degrees of bliss. So Krishna and Dwarka is sweet because it's actually the same form as he is in Vrindavan, but the people that realize him as Supreme Lord. So that is less intense than in Vrindavan. And the people in Mathura also realize Krishna. It's also less intense. They see him as Supreme Lord. Because in Mathura there is Vasudeva Devaki, and they know Krishna had four arms when he came out of the womb. We know he is the Lord of the Yadus. He is Supreme Lord come to save the Devatas from Kamsa, etc. So whether it is Mathura or Dwarka, there is this idea that Krishna is Supreme Lord. So therefore the intensity of the prema is less. But in Vrindavan it is complete. And therefore we say that Krishna in Dwarka is Purna, Krishna in Mathura is Purnatara, and Krishna in Vrindavan is Purnatama. Most complete. Because the Madhurya is undiluted, uncontaminated, or unobstructed by anything else. So therefore, accordingly as you surrender unto me, I surrender to you. So if you surrender to Krishna, and you surrender Krishna in Vrindavan, then you get a higher type of prema. It's a Madhurya prema. And even in Vrindavan, again, there is intensity. If you have Dasya prema, there's one level. If you have Sakya, it becomes more intense, and the prema goes to Sneha. It's more intense. Yeah? And if you have Vatsalya, it's even more intense. It goes up to Raga. Continuous attachment to the Supreme Lord. And if you have Madhurya Rasa, then it goes up to Bhava, Mahabhava, Anuraga. And if you get up to Radharani, it's Mahabhava only. It's at the highest of all. So even in Vrindavan, there's intensities according to the different rasas. So accordingly, as you worship the Lord in the different rasas, you get different intensity. So, that's the Supreme Lord. He is satisfied with all this, but he's satisfied in various degrees. And of course, he's always satisfied with bhakti more than anything else, but within bhakti, he's most satisfied with worship of Krishna.
and worship Krishna. The most bliss comes with Madhurya Rasa. So, therefore, all these different topics of Bhagavatam are there. And we should understand their relative nature. They're all related directly or indirectly to worship of Krishna. So that should be our understanding. And though we can study these different things, it's not so necessary to get into all the details. You got, like previously, please talk about all the different time systems and divisions of time, talk about the different planets, etc. All this is there to show how the Supreme Lord produces a material world and makes a precise mechanism to help the living entities by these systems, going through the Dharma and Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and finally getting to Bhakti Yoga so that the Jiva can get out of the material world and realize a relationship with the Lord, a satisfying relationship. Between jivas. Well, like the devotees, even in the material world, or in the pastimes of Krishna we see. For instance, in Vrindavan we have Nanda and Yasoda and all the elder cowherd women and men, and then we have all of the cowherd boys. What is the relationship? Primarily, of course, the relationship is with Krishna. Everybody's centered on Krishna. But with each other, what is it? They all realize they are friends, supporting their worship of Krishna. So they have a friendly relationship with all the other devotees there. And all other devotees, of course, are also centered on Krishna. So the center of everybody is Krishna, but they're all friendly. So, of course, the elders are friendly with the elders. And they're all in Vatsalya Rasa. And the cowherd boys are all friendly with each other, and they're in Sakya Rasa with Krishna. So with each other they have, well, we can say it is a type of sakya or a relationship. But generally, we define rasa in relation to Krishna only. So we can say it's like a secondary sakya rasa. The real sakya rasa is Krishna is the center and the devotee is the experiencer of the rasa. So we have devotee to devotee, and then it is secondary. And it is all for pastimes. So, in the pastimes, let's say in Sakya Rasa, we have the cowherd boys. They are all friendly with Krishna and they're friendly with each other. But sometimes they may have arguments or whatever like this, some sort of dissension in the spiritual world, which is all for pastimes only. So they act almost as if they're in the material, they're material entities because they go through different activities and whatnot. But it is all there to increase the Sakya Rasa for Krishna. So their relationships with each other are there to support the pastimes in relation to Krishna.
How do they get rid of the ego?
Well, for us, how do we get rid of ego? The main process is the cultivation of bhakti itself. Bhakti means that we serve the Supreme Lord with the intention of pleasing Him. Ego is a manifestation of I exist because I want to enjoy and I identify with the material body. So this is the opposite. I exist as a servant of the Lord is the basis of bhakti. So by continually performing bhakti, automatically we must destroy the false ego, which is based on avidya or ignorance. I am separate from the Lord. So the very process of bhakti implies that we're destroying false ego, ignorance, the desires which arise from the false ego, consequently the actions and consequently the karma. Everything is annihilated by the process of bhakti, all these obstacles.
Maharaj, you are always emphasizing pure bhakti. In 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is saying that even your prescribed duties you cannot give up out of fearfulness, or you know, they are in mode of ignorance or passion, but they have to be performed.
Yeah.
So the prescribed duties also become bhakti when you do it for Krishna.
Yeah. Well, in one sense, these rules are there, and the idea that you have to do all these prescribed duties, never give up your prescribed duties. This is from the point of view of karma yoga.
So it's a karma yoga.
It's a lower rule. And then the rule of bhakti is, as long as you don't have attraction for the pastimes and hearing about the Supreme Lord, then you must do these. You must follow the karma yoga. You must do the duties. And when you do develop faith in the Supreme Lord, then you don't have to do them. So therefore the Bhagavatam says that even if you give up chetva swadharmam, swadharma means the things you should do, and scripture says you cannot give them up, but you give them up because you're worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord. So even if you do that and you don't get perfection, you progress a little bit, but you don't, there is no loss. So in other words, it doesn't become an absolute rule when we've taken to the process of bhakti. If you give up your duties without the bhakti, yes, that is wrong. But once you develop that taste for the topics of the Lord, then if you give it up, it's not wrong anymore.
But when Arjuna is fighting in the battlefield,
yeah,
on Krishna's instructions, so his fighting is bhakti, isn't it?
That's different. Of course, first of all, Krishna argues from the point of view of dharma. You must fight because it's a duty of a kshatriya. And kshatriya should not back out of battle. They should not get infamy, etc. So he gives all sorts of things like this. And then he also gives rules from reasoning from jnana. Actually, you're not the body anyway, so you shouldn't be disturbed. If you kill somebody or somebody kills you, and ultimately, you know, you're the Atma. So he argues from the point of view of karma. He also argues from the point of view of jnana, just to convince him to fight. But actually, the real reason you should fight is because Krishna wants him to fight. That's all. So he disobeys the Lord. That is bhakti reason. So there's different levels of reasoning in the Bhagavad Gita also. So the ultimate reason is bhakti. Whether it is karma or jnana or whatever, ultimately the reason that he will fight is because he is friend of Krishna. That's why.
Is there any level of surrender to what getting that? I just want to know how a person can fully surrender to Lord Krishna. Like you are saying that first is 1.01 surrender, then if you are get a prema level, then it's 100% surrender. So how we will know that I have fully surrendered to Krishna? Like in a when a person starts new in bhakti, so what does the fully surrender mean actually?
Well, the beginning is maybe the 0.01%. So if you begin, obviously it's not full, because one still has material attractions.
Yeah.
If one has got prema, one has no idea that the material world exists. No attraction to anything in the material world. One even forgets to eat and drink and breathe or whatever. That is one's attraction for the Lord. One doesn't care about the material world at all. One only cares about Krishna.
No, I want to know that. Fully surrender means just chanting 16 rounds.
No.
44 emulative principles.
That is partial. But that's a person in the very beginning can do that also, or after 1 year or 5 months can do that, but that doesn't mean 100% surrender. It is partial, but still there's the process of anartana vritti, gradual destruction of your various anartas and desires, etc. And then in bhava stage you destroy the ahankara, the root, the knot in the heart. So it's a gradual stages of destruction of all the anartas, etc. So the 100% surrender is prema. But that takes time. Go through different stages.
Living in the material world, do they develop a particular vasta relationship with the Lord? Or is it eternal?
Is it eternal?
In one sense, it's eternal because everything spiritual is eternal. But at the same time, generally, we start with sadhana, and in sadhana, we actually choose to worship a certain form like Rama or Narasimhadeva or Vishnu or Krishna. And in that sadhana, then we go through sadhana, and then we get to bhava, and we go through prema. And generally, we stick with that same object of worship. Now, with the other objects of worship, there's no choice. It's all dasya anyway. With Rama or Narasimhadeva or Vishnu or Varaha, it's all dasya rasa. There's no real change at all. It's only with Krishna that one could have a choice between dasya, sakya, vatsalya, madhurya. Yeah? So in any case, it depends on our a lot on our sadhana. What we fix in our sadhana determines what happens in bhava and then in prema. So generally in bhava, we realize whatever we've been worshipping in sadhana. If we worship Vishnu in our sadhana, then that's who we realize when we get to bhava. And that becomes deeper in prema. So that's the general. There can be exceptions to the rule, etc., as well, by the mercy of the Lord or the devotees. Somewhere in the middle, some change takes place. But generally, that's the system. So the sadhana helps to determine the result. And therefore, in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, say Radha Krishna, we put Radha Krishna in our temple. Everybody worships Radha Krishna, and generally they'll be attracted to that form. But some devotees may be attracted to other forms, like Sakya Rasa or whatever, like that as well. And then they can cultivate that privately. But it's also, it's eternal in the sense that how do we choose this, or how do we have the good fortune of associating with devotees who worship Radha Krishna or whatever? We don't know. Will of Krishna. Why the will of Krishna, or mercy of Krishna, that also is only Krishna knows. So maybe he understands our future tendencies or whatever like that, and therefore it's like that. And as well, how is it eternal? It's because bhava that descends on the jiva in bhava stage, that's the sthayi bhava, which means dasya, sakya, vatsalya, madhurya. It's called nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakritam. It is not created by sadhana. It's simply manifested in the jiva by sadhana. So it's eternally with Krishna. And it manifests in the jiva, that particular bhava. It's with Krishna and the associates, the eternal associates in the spiritual world. And that expands and manifests within the jiva. Well, in a sense, it's just a matter of perception where we are. In one sense, it doesn't really matter because the Atma is ultimately beyond time and space, and the spiritual world is beyond time and space. So where that bhava exists or where the jiva exists is only a matter of perception. From Krishna's point of view, everything is in him. From our point of view, we're stuck in the material world and material bodies, etc. So it's just a matter of our perception. And if you go to the spiritual world, then you're eternally there, which is strange because actually we were here, we went there, but from Krishna's point of view and our point of view, once we're there eternally, and we're never left. So the whole idea of time and beginning and end of the material world is like our, there's a little bit of a, you know, prejudice or something, or a material time concept, which we stick on everything and try to logically explain. Different gatekeepers.
Like a different personalities who sort of assist in a sense the entity to enter the spiritual.
Oh, well, there is in the Upanishads, there is a description of the ascension of the jiva upwards until he goes to the spiritual world, and he goes through these different things which are also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, like the dark moon and the waxing phase of the moon, and in the Uttarayana period, in light, not darkness, or fire, etc. So these are considered to be different devatas that lead you upward to another level, another level, another level, and then the Vishnu Dutas meet you and take you to the spiritual world. So they're like some guides that take you through the upper planetary systems, and then you go to the spiritual world. So that's one system where you gradually elevate. It's called Kramamukti. The other system is there's nothing like that, it just happens. and you end up suddenly in the spiritual world, the spiritual body. Would they act as intermediate? Well, could. We don't see any detailed descriptions of that. But obviously, in the spiritual world, let's say Gokul in the spiritual world, there are millions or billions of, you know, eternal associates there. So you enter into one of those groups, and then you're guided within that group for a particular service. Whether that's cowherd boys or manjaris or gopis or elders or whatever. What's that? Raghunuga, what about it?
Is it exclusive to few traditions of Vaishnavism, or is it quite general?
Actually, it's only in, as far as I see, it's two sampradayas. That is Vallabha, Pushti Marga, Vatsalya there, and then the Gaudiya Sampradaya. I don't know about the Nambarka, whether they think of Raghunuga or not. But definitely, it's not in the Madhva and Madhvas and the Ramanujas. It's purely Vaidhi Bhakti there, quite strictly Vaidhi Bhakti. And Raghunuga is not only for Radha and Krishna. It's not only Manjari Bhava. There's Raghunuga for Sakya, Raghunuga for Vatsalya, Raghunuga for Dasya with Krishna also. It could be theoretically, but in our sampradaya, generally, it's all Manjari Bhava, and in the Vallabha Sampradaya, it's all Vatsalya.